Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all here, coming from CPAC, even though this is airing Saturday at 12 Eastern. I'm actually recording this particular segment actually went Thursday at 2 in the afternoon. So there you go. The magic of radio, as far as you're all concerned, it's happening at the same time. Anyway, I got to get through some introductions first. We have actually one guest now and one guest coming up shortly in the same segment. Miracle of miracles. So, and Silk or Joe Show, we want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist. We want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. And you can find Main Street Radio Network on mainstreetradionetwork.com. You can find podcasts of the Silk or Joe Show up there as well. And you can find us on Gitter, GETTR.com at Silk or Joe Show. You can find Main Street Radio Network on Facebook, Twitter, and just Facebook and Twitter. Oh, yeah, on Wimkin, W-I-M-K-I-N, at Main Street Radio Network. All right, now that I've lost all of my breath, we have joined by Brooke Goldstein. She is founder and executive director at the Lawfare Project. Brooke Goldstein, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
Thank you for having me. I'm very pleased to be here at CPAC and excited to speak on the main stage very shortly.
Yeah, very shortly from where we're sitting, 2 days ago from where I was listening. So what do you intend to discuss here?
So we're going to talk about the lawsuits that we filed against schools like Columbia University or Carnegie Mellon University for fostering a hostile environment against their Jewish students. The fact is that American college students have been radicalized on our campuses, and the media has turned a blind eye. Apparently, the Department of Education has been turning a blind eye, and we're here to say enough is enough. And the rising Jew hatred and pro-terror sentiment on our college campuses is a symptom of a much larger issue. And I always said that this is one of the greatest national security threats that we face, which is this subversive campaign that is funded, for example, by states like Qatar to turn American students not just against Israel but against America.
Part of the reasoning goes hand in hand with we hate America because they're supporting the Israeli occupiers, and they're using like 30-year-old terms to describe the Israelis, describing situations that aren't true. Palestine hasn't been occupied since, 2004, 2005, somewhere in there. But they still say it's occupied territory because Israel exists. They think that, originally it was just, they're occupying that little sliver that Palestine
is. Yeah, but let's get to the point, okay? Yeah. This is a theological battle. This is not a battle for territory. We're talking about Islamist terrorism, theologically motivated terrorism that makes people go and kill women, rape them, burn babies alive. And so we here in the West, try to use our Western concepts to understand why they do it. We want to understand why did they fly their planes in 9/11 into the Twin Towers? Why did they go kill babies in southern Israel? And it has nothing to do with the Oslo Accords or Camp David or, Ariel Sharon walking on the Temple Mount. It has everything to do with radical Islam. And we need to be talking about the threat for what it is, because it is a threat that is shared both by Israel and by the West. And the fact that we have, the recent stats show that the majority of youth in the United States under the age of 30, not so much youth, now young adults, support what Hamas did on October the 7th should be a huge wake-up call of what this country is going to look like in 5 to 10 years if there isn't a major course corrector.
We had a preview of that in 2020 because these same activists, one of the Black Lives Matter chapters actually, in the immediate aftermath of the October 7th massacre, everyone's staring in horror and shock. They go out and say, yeah, this is what decolonization looks like. They're talking they want to bring it here. And like I said, in 2020, we had kind of previewed that. Riots all over the place, 25 dead, $2 billion in damage.
Yeah, this is, I think, the chapter you were talking about that used as its logo one of the paratroopers. And it's not a paratrooper, an image of a paraglider. Yeah. Right. They glorify and idealize terrorism. It used to be that when you murdered innocent children, this would be widely condemned. But, after 9/11, there was a very strategic campaign under the guise of Islamophobia. I call it the Islamophobomania campaign, which shamed people and sued people and even attacked people with physical violence if they dared speak out against the threat of radical Islam. And so terrorists became freedom fighters, and people, you know, who rape and kill innocent women became engaging in justified resistance against the so-called Israeli occupation. And obviously this narrative is false. Jews are indigenous to Israel. We are the oldest, most persecuted minority community in human history. And Jew hatred has come and gone and risen in ebbs and flows. And guess what? The Nazis, they also had their justifications for killing 6 million Jews. And the Inquisition had their justifications, but they're BS. And so we cannot fall for this recent, you know, narrative that's wrapped up in human rights terminology and anti-colonial terminology, because it is false. And we must call it out for what it is, which is radical terrorism, theologically motivated terrorism, whose one goal is death and to reestablish the caliphate. That's what this is all about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and their leaders have actually been openly said such things like, what was it, CARE, the Center for American Islamic Relations, sometime years ago, like 23 years ago, they openly said, yeah, we want a caliphate in the U.S. And you know, you have Congresswoman Ilhan Omar coming out saying she's loyal to Somalia first and Islam second. America wasn't anywhere in there. And that's the kind of, and we're supposed to, well, for the interest of diversity and multiculturalism, we're just supposed to roll over and accept that.
Well, we're bending over backwards, making excuses and why we should be politically correct. Look, when I talked to a Holocaust survivor a couple years back, I said, what is the number one lesson that we should learn? And he said, if somebody says they're going to kill you, believe them, okay? And going back to what you were saying about the so-called occupation narrative, Israel pulled every last man, woman, and child out of Gaza in 2005. And what were we doing then? We were engaging in this fantasy of building a Palestinian Islamic State. And what happened? Hamas happened. Hamas was voted into office by the majority of Palestinian Muslims who still to this day support Hamas. We created a terror state on the border with Israel, and now we're paying for it. And so it is particularly appalling to hear language that, number one, is conditioning aid to Israel as it battles in a defensive warfare on the asymmetric battlefield against terrorists that use its own children as human shields, that use schools as rocket launching pads, and we're conditioning aid to Israel. Why? Because Hamas, their goal is to maximize civilian casualties. And the more civilian casualties they have, the more Israel gets punished. And yet humanitarian aid, so-called humanitarian aid that we know is going directly to Hamas, there's no conditions on that. That's flowing in the millions. And that's aiding and abetting terrorism in violation of U.S. law, in violation of the Foreign Assistance Act. We've been funding UNRWA, the United Nations Relief Works Agency, which we know and which we have known for the past 15 years, has been working together with Hamas to radicalize and abuse Muslim children. So, you know, the question is, where do we go from here? Is there a course corrector? And I think of utmost importance is to support the state of Israel as it gets rid of Hamas. Because that is an absolute must. Israel cannot live in peace when it has a terrorist state at its borders that has from time after time proven to, its sole goal is to engage in genocide against the Jewish people.
Well, Brooke Goldstein, appreciate you being on the Silk or Joe show. We have to let go of you now as we make way for our next guest, who is Michael Chamberlain, Director of Protect the Public's Trust. He previously served 4 years at the U.S. Department of Education in the Office of Communications and Outreach.
Thank you.
Well, one of the things that we do at Protect the Public's Trust is we file Freedom of Information Act requests, and we get documents and records from the federal government agencies. And in one of the recent batches that we received from the Department of Homeland Security, a spokesperson for DHS, this was back in September of 2022, at the time, they were publicly saying, oh, yeah, well, there's no problems. You know, we have everything under control. You know, nobody's getting away from us. We know where people are going. But it turns out that they had a conversation with a friendly reporter at the Washington Post, and this spokesperson admitted that, well, yeah, we don't know where people go. The reporter asked about Governors Abbott in Texas and Governor Ducey at the time in Arizona, sending the illegal immigrants out of their state and sending them to venues north. And so we admitted that the reporter asked, well, do you know where they end up? Are those the final destinations? And the DHS official said, well, off the record, we don't know where they go. Once they leave our custody, we have no way to track them, which is exactly what people had been saying at the time and DHS had been denying. And they just admitted it to a friendly reporter that once people leave their custody, they have no idea where they go. They don't have any way to keep track. They don't know, and there's no way for them to find out. They give them a paper with a court date, which may be years in the future, and then just hope that they show up at the place that they asked them to, and there's no way for them to verify any of that. So it's completely opposite of what they were saying at the time. And at the time they were claiming, oh, there's no crisis. But obviously they were admitting that they have no way to track people.
Wine Country by rising country star Hannah Ellis. After 10 years of carving out her own space in Music City, the Kentucky native now introduces her debut album, That Girl, available now. Named by Rolling Stone Country as an artist to watch and a CMT Listen Up artist, Hannah Ellis has appeared on the Grand Ole Opry several times and toured with stars such as Billy Currington, Gavin DeGraw, and Carly Pearce. That Girl reveals a seasoned songwriter embracing her small-town roots, her real-life romance, and her relatable artistic voice. Hannah Ellis told us about the inspiration for the new album.
The heart of country music is storytelling. Life itself is the inspiration behind this record. Whether it's my sister's breakup, my insecurities, or falling in love, I'm just living my life with a pen and a microphone.
That Girl is now available wherever you get music. For more, visit HannahEllisMusic.com.
From debut author Carolina Ixta comes an unforgettable new young adult novel, Shut Up, This Is Serious, tells the story of two Latina girls growing up in East Oakland, who face a world full of messy complexities as they try to navigate their high school years. Belen wants the normal teen stuff, to hang out with friends, experience love, or maybe even have a boyfriend. But nothing is normal in her East Oakland community. Her father left her family. She's at risk of not graduating. And Letty, her religious best friend, is pregnant by the boyfriend she hasn't told her parents about. Weighed by a depression she can't seem to shake, Belen sees her other classmates getting ready for college. But what future is there for girls like her? Author Carolina Ixta.
Shut Up, This Is Serious deals with topics such as racism, generational trauma, and teen pregnancies, though it's also about the fierce and intimate uplifting power of friendship and chosen family.
Shut Up, This Is Serious is now available wherever books are sold.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Adopt US Kids presents multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give him a little talking to man, mano a mano.
Hey, Steve. It's now a good time?
No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
Back to the Super Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe here with all of you. Boy, been a frantic, frenetic CPAC, right? And we are now joined by Drew Allen. He is Vice President of Client Development at Publius. He is a columnist, host of the Drew Allen podcast. Author of America's Outstand. Will you vote to save democracy? Will you vote to save or destroy America in 2024? Sorry, I misread your title there. But from where I'm staring, the angle I have to sit at to look at the monitor here, the number 2024 blended in with your phone. So I was like, oh, I can't. I have to stop reading.
No, don't worry about it. It's all good, man.
So tell us about the
Well, look, I mean, I think it's obviously apropos for this time. I mean, while everyone else, look, last October is when the book came out, right? And the premise of America's Last Stand is not only to raise awareness about the gravity of the situation in America, how important and significant this particular election is in our history and what it means for our country's future, but the premise was that it's going to be Trump versus Biden or some other Democrat they replace him with. And it's the definitive voting guide for 2024. Why you better vote for Trump or you're going to lose your country.
So, there. Studio lost my microphone for a second. That's why I'm sitting here stuttering and stammering, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's very important that people realize just what's at stake this election year. They can't afford to sit it out, because if you do, well, there goes your country right there. Joe Biden, we've had 4 years of Joe Biden. Everyone knows what Joe Biden stands for. Everyone knows what's going to happen if he stays in office. So you got to wonder at this point, if you say, oh, I'm on the sidelines, I'm not going to vote, why?
Yeah, well, look, the Democrats don't do us any favors with the mental warfare, if you will, when they obviously say that Trump's a threat to democracy, because they'll say the same things that I'm saying and we're saying, right? This is such an important election. We're going to lose the country. They're full of crap and lying. Or, you know, if we are going to lose the country, obviously it'll be because the Democrats retain power. And look, this is a very serious situation. I understand when we live through history, in history, as human beings, sometimes you can't recognize the stakes. You know, when we look back on 1776 or 1861, it has a different significance to us in hindsight. George Washington, he understood more or less what was at stake, but they were like us, just going through day to day, trying to fight for the country. And that's what we are today. I try to get people to understand we're the patriots of 2024. This is the third major test we faced as a nation. So it's as important as 1776 and 1861. The difference here is, look, 1776, they didn't have a chance of voting, right? They had to go to war with Great Britain. The Civil War was a similar situation. We are trying to use our, you know, God-given rights and our ability to vote to save the country. And that's the difference here. And of course, what's so dangerous is the Democrats are doing what? Trying to deprive us of the peaceful means that we have, right, to take back our country's destiny.
Yeah. And, you know, it seems like even, I don't know where you stand on, because I never asked you, even though, spoiler alert, folks, I get a lot of guests from Mr. Drew Allen here. But like, I don't think I've never asked him like what his take was on how, if the 2020 election was stolen by Hammer scorecard or anything like that, or Raspberry Pi devices in the electoral halls. But regardless of if you think it was or wasn't, Democrats are trying to steal it much more overtly this time with their lawfare against Trump. You know, you had that ruling from New York where he's got to pay $350 million plus another $100 million interest, and they'll seize his assets if they don't. And of course, the whole trial was about judging what his assets were valued. So you can imagine they'd say, well, all of your assets are worth $450 million, regardless of what you say, and just take everything from him. And that seems to be their way of trying to fix the election by just getting him out by bankrupting him.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, they do this, this intimidation. You know, that's in many ways what Trump-Russia collusion was as well. You know, when they showed up with the PP dossier, you know, the CIA, and they say, hey, Trump, we've got this salacious information about you. I mean, it, really what they were doing was intimidating him. And they made it up, of course, as well. But this is what our government does. They're the enemy of the American people. And with regards to the stolen election, the tide's turning in terms of people feeling more confident about 2020 was 100% stolen. We know that it was stolen, and it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out just how. There's so much information out there now about how they planned this even 7 months ahead, how they were so determined to get rid of Trump. And yes, yeah, so no doubt. And people shouldn't be afraid to acknowledge that, because you have a lot of people who doubt Trump's ability to win in 2024 based on what happened in 2020. So this is where you get the conversation about, oh, well, maybe we should go with someone else. Trump's a loser. He's not. He got more votes in 2020 than he did in 2016. He is popular. So, you know, a lot of the warfare that the left engages in is altering your reality, and perception is reality. So if you remember the freedom truckers in Canada, when that protest was going on for their rights over there, the media downplayed how big it was. It was a massive, massive protest and rally. And they would act like, oh, you know, there are only 10 trucks. I mean, this is what they did, because they don't want you to believe that we're in the majority. And we are. So people need to be confident, need to speak up and show up in 2024 in massive numbers. They're going to cheat. But it doesn't mean that they look, cheating's not new. 2020 was just a more massive scale than usual. So show up and vote. You know, the country's at stake.
Yeah. And, you know, that's why actually my previous housemate, you know, she was very discouraged after the 2020 election. She's like, why the heck should I even bother voting again after that? And, you know, that's how I explained it to her. Don't make it easy for them to cheat.
Right. You can't control that in many ways. They're going to cheat, and they've always cheated, frankly. You can go back to JFK.
Yeah, my grandmother, she voted for JFK. But she figures Lyndon Johnson cheated in Texas.
Yeah. Look, I mean, this is part of what the Democrats do. They're not bound by morality like we are. And, you know, we just have to toughen up in many ways. We have to be mentally strong as well. And we have to do everything we can in our control. What's in our control? Look, I mean, in red states where we control the legislatures, obviously, those elected officials need to fortify the voting laws. I mean, we need to push this stuff. The left doesn't have an attitude like, oh, this is too hard to do. They just push and push and push, and they're patient. We need to adopt the same kind of appetite for saving the country, which is, I don't care what the odds are. I don't care if it's not popular at the moment. We have to press ahead and play the long game, too, for the country. We seem too quick to give up.
Yeah, and you know, that's been my big thing with the RNC establishment and all that. It seems like they just want to give up almost. You know, like with Obamacare, for example, my favorite example. They, you know, 2014, yeah, we need we have the House, we need the Senate to get rid of it. They get the Senate. Oh, we need the presidency. They get the presidency. You know, we can't do it because we don't have enough people in the Senate. And they had like a 10-senator majority going on back then, and they said they couldn't do anything. But Democrats, with just a split Senate, they got everything done they have. We have about 40 seconds left, so go ahead.
Well, look, that's the rhinos we're talking about. They string us along, and they're part of the problem. They are part of the establishment. They're the enemy. So that's one thing we have to do. We have to get involved and be activists ourselves. We can't let Mitch McConnell pick our candidates for us because we get in this situation where we get these people to be our defense in Washington, D.C., and they stab us in the back. So we have to be aware of that and fight it.
All right, last 10 seconds here. I cannot for the life of me get my cursor to appear on the monitor. So give us your book once more and where to get it.
Oh, yeah. America's Last Stand. Will you vote to save or destroy America in 2024? Available on Amazon.
All right, Drew Allen, thank you for being on the Silver Joe Show. Listeners, more to come after the break.
I'm Marissa Brainy with some party hosting tips for your game day watch party in partnership with Target, my favorite one-stop shop. This year, Target's pulled together three game day spreads for under $25, a cheeseburger taco board, fun twist on a traditional, a wing basket, gotta have those wings, and a nacho bar. Love these for great finger food options that won't break the bank. If you're looking for snacks, Target's Good & Gather brand has you covered, from chips and popcorns to great dips. And in terms of drinks, you want some non-alcoholic versions as well. So think about varieties like Lagunitas, Athletic Brewing Co., and Good & Gather's sparkling water. The cherry cola flavor is a must. Don't forget Target offers same-day delivery and drive-up options, which make it really easy to stick to your list and your budget. Just head to Target.com or the Target app.
Hello, I'm Peter Castleman, and I'm the co-author of this book, Eat to Think. We come into this world with a beautiful brain. The most amazing part about the brain is it's designed to regenerate, not deteriorate. Yet we're starting to eat foods that destroy our brains. The result is a crisis of cognition decline. 1 in 3 seniors are dying with some form of dementia. It does not have to be this way. We wrote this book, Eat to Think, because 97% of your brain health you control. And in this book is a roadmap to try to understand the brain and a path to how you improve your brain health. Go to eattothink.com, download a free version of the book, as well as other products that we can give you to help you start your journey to improve your brain health.
I was in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean when it happened. There was a sudden jolt and our submarine crashed on the seafloor. We were in total darkness.
That's Dr. Dejana Figuerella, a marine biologist and STEM teacher, talking about a deep sea dive she'll never forget.
It's funny, when I was a kid, I was afraid of the ocean, and there I was, 2 miles below the surface. But as a scientist, you prepare for that. Using our training and a little creativity, we fixed the sub and finished our experiments. The dive was just too important. Every dive gives us glimpses at things few people ever get to see. Glowing creatures, fiery undersea volcanoes. When we got back to the surface, I kissed the ground and called my mom, of course. But you know what? I wouldn't trade that dive for anything.
Dr. Figueroa uses her passion for STEM to discover new things and make the world a better place. She can STEM, so can you. Check out She Can STEM for more stories and inspiration. A message from the Ad Council.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
This is David Cordani, CEO of Cigna. For more than 20 years, Cigna has worked with the March of Dimes to address premature births in the U.S. Premature births cause horrible suffering and cost billions of dollars each year. That's why Cigna is committed to raising funds and awareness through our employees, family, and friends to improve the health of moms and babies. Please join us in supporting the March for Babies. Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
The March of Dimes and HCA Healthcare are committed to the best possible start for every baby. I'm Amy Casseri, Vice President of HCA Women and Children's Services, where we have the honor of delivering over 200,000 babies a year. We partner with the March of Dimes on research and fundraising to help build a brighter future for babies everywhere. So march with us on one of the many HCA teams assembled nationwide. Learn more at marchforbabies.org/HCA.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. The CPAC edition of the Silker Joe Show, one of them anyway. Hopefully we'll be able to record some interviews for next week as well. However, we're sitting here. It's not Saturday as I recorded. It's Saturday as you're hearing it. I just want to get that note out. It's actually Thursday as I recorded, which is why we're joined by Mark Chenoweth. He is president and chief legal officer of New Civil Liberties Alliance. Previously, he was chief of staff to Mike Pompeo while he served in Congress. Mark Chenoweth, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
Thanks for having me, Joe. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you. So, you know, a lot of court rulings that you can talk about that we've actually covered on the show before, you know, Relentless versus Department of Commerce, for example, their challenge to the Chevron defense. you know, it's that topic has fled my mind in the hecticness of trying to get everything set up here.
Yeah.
In fact, the dictionary has fled my mind. I don't think hecticness is a word. But go ahead and remind our listeners and secretly me as well.
Sure.
The first Department of
Commerce. Well, yeah, we argued this case at the U.S. Supreme Court last month. And the issue is really whether or not federal judges have to defer to the legal interpretations made by administrative agencies when they're interpreting federal statutes. Ordinarily, we would think that it's the job of judges to interpret federal statutes. But under this 40-year-old Chevron doctrine, if you're suing a federal agency or a federal agency is suing you and there's a supposed ambiguity in the statute, then the judge is supposed to defer to the agency's reasonable interpretation of that statute. But our view at NCLA is, look, if the judge in your case is deferring to the government's interpretation of the law, then you're not getting a fair shake in court. And so we made that argument and some other reasons why that deference doctrine needs to go. And I think your argument went well. In fact, this is kind of funny, Joe. Your folks listening may not have heard about this. At oral argument this week in a different case, a case called Corner Post, Justice Jackson asked a question in which she referred to Chevron deference in the past tense. And it got everybody kind of Twitter saying, she's already seen the draft opinion circulating. So knock on wood, Chevron deference might be on the way out.
Yeah. Now, how did it get in there to begin with? I guess our agencies back then were a little bit less loose when it comes to overregulating on their own, so we could trust them not to abuse this opinion.
Well, I think in 1984, so two things. One, we were coming off of a period in the 1970s where the federal judges, particularly the judges in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, had done a lot of things that were fairly aggressive and activist in the way of what they were doing. And so I think the idea was in the Reagan administration, and remember, this was Justice Gorsuch's mother, Ann Gorsuch, who was the head of the EPA under Reagan, who was on the other side of this case back then, who essentially won the case. And I think they thought that if you could make judges defer to the agencies, then the president would have a little more control over and be able to stop some of this judicial activism. But that was at a time before we had as much focus on originalism and textualism. Remember, Ed Meese came along in the mid-1980s with Ronald Reagan and started talking about the importance of originalism. And then Justice Scalia gets on the Supreme Court and starts talking about the importance of textualism. And now we live in a world where most of these judges are originalists and textualists. And I think people have a lot more faith that judges are able to follow the law as Congress wrote it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as opposed to how the agencies want it.
Correct.
Because you have to imagine that there's been a lot of abuses. And there's going to, if what Ketanji Brown Jackson alluded to turns out to be correct, and that was effectively an accidental leak of their upcoming opinion, there's a lot of agencies that are going to need some reform going on.
It'll have a very broad effect. And, you know, I think it'll mostly be a prospective effect. I don't think it necessarily jeopardizes all the decisions that have you know, been decided before under Chevron deference. But it certainly will mean that I think agencies will be less adventuresome in their interpretations of statutes, because they'll know that whatever interpretation they come up with, they're going to have to convince a court that their interpretation is correct without any deference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so far, having been not having to do that,
they've gotten away with murder. I mean, it's pretty bad. And in fact, the second case that we have up, and this is going to be argued just next week on February 28th, is our bump stock ban case against the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
Oh, yeah. They sound like people who would have gone with the Chevron deference some time or two.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, what happened in this case, this case, by the way, the name of it is Garland v. Cargill. And we represent Mr. Cargill, who's an Army veteran and owns a gun store in Austin, Texas, and believes that ATF shouldn't be able to write criminal laws, because it's the job of Congress under our Constitution, not the job of the federal agencies, to define and write the criminal laws. But here you have, and Congress did ban machine guns back in 1986, and Ronald Reagan signed that ban into law. But then ATF came along, and for 15 years, during the Bush administration, the Obama administration, and the beginning of the Trump administration, ATF said that these bump stocks were perfectly legal and you were allowed to buy them and there was no problem. And then all of a sudden, after the tragic massacre in Las Vegas, ATF reversed course and said, these things are machine guns. They're unlawful. Well, 500,000 of them had been sold. So you turned about 500,000 people into felons overnight. There's a 10-year prison sentence that comes from owning these things. And again, Congress didn't act. So even Dianne Feinstein, who's about as pro-gun control as legislators got, she said, ATF can't do this on their own. This has to come from Congress. There has to be a bill in Congress to do this, not the agency. So that's the issue in front of the court, is whether ATF can do this. And then also, just, is ATF right about their interpretation of the statute? Because they say that bump stocks are machine guns. And we say, well, first of all, they don't fire automatically the way that machine guns do. The trigger has to be reset for every bullet that's fired from a semi-automatic weapon, even if it's equipped with a bump stock. And second of all, they're not firing. I said that backwards. So that what I just said is, there's a single function of the trigger for every bullet fired, and then they're not automatic because you have to actually pull back on the gun with your trigger hand and push away from you on the four stock for each shot fired. And that's a very manual function. It's not an automatic function. So I think the court on one or both of those bases will find that bump stocks can't be banned by ATF.
Yeah, ATF seems to be like weaving a web of Chevron deferences here with that sort of thing, because they might get around that a little bit, because one of the things that I read that they were trying to do was say that an automatic weapon counted as anything where pressure on the trigger, not fully pulling it back, just having pressure on the trigger and never releasing that pressure means that you can continuously fire bullets. So like even with the semi-automatic weapon, technically speaking, you could have like the most remote, tiniest number of pounds per square inch you can think of, getting into discrete math Olive Knoll territory there. But like, you could have that infinitely small amount, and that would still count as an automatic weapon, even though by no other sane definition it would be.
Right. I mean, and so that's why you have to have these sort of definitions written by Congress. You can't have the agency changing the definition of things or changing what's legal and illegal. That's not part of their role under the Constitution. And it creates a situation where it's very difficult for law-abiding citizens to stay on the right side of the law if the agency can change it.
Like you just need a lawyer. Well, even a couple of years ago, actually, someone did the math or whatever and found that pretty much you do 3 felonies a day,
right,
because of what all these agencies are doing. And like, you just need a lawyer to wake up every day, it seems.
The over-criminalization is a huge problem, and it only becomes worse if agencies are able to do this on their own. At least if Congress is the one doing it, they can be held accountable by the voters at the ballot box.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've got 2 minutes left here. Another case that you can give some light on is Murphy versus Missouri, a challenge to the Biden administration's censorship, which, theoretically could prevent us from talking about stuff like this.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I'm shocked by the amount of the censorship that this administration has been engaged in and that it thinks it can get away with. The First Amendment does not allow the government to censor speech. The line that the government is allowed to police is the line between legal speech and illegal speech. Look, if there's child porn up on the internet, the government can take that down because that's illegal. And I want that down, and I think everybody wants that kind of thing down off the internet. But this administration wants to police the line between truthful speech and false speech. And first of all, it's very bad at doing it because it says things like the Hunter Biden laptop should come down, even though that was true. And it says some of the things that our clients were saying about COVID-19, it took that stuff down, even though it was true. So we have a client, for example, who she's not anti-vax. She volunteered for the vaccine trials, but she was injured in the course of volunteering for the vaccine trials. She was diagnosed as injured by the National Institutes for Health. So she's not making this up. And yet she tried to set up some online support groups for people that were vaccine injured. And the government told the social media companies to take those down and shut those down. And that's a direct violation of her First Amendment free speech rights. And it's insane that this administration is trying to do that kind of thing, but they are. And it's not just one agency. It's a dozen or more agencies.
All right, well, we are just about out of time, like 45 seconds left here. So Mark Chenoweth, President and Chief Legal Officer of New Civil Liberties Alliance, where can we find out more about your group?
NCLALegal.org is our website. We invite people to go there. You can follow us at NCLALegal on X as well. And we have a Facebook page too. So look for us at any of those places. But nclalegal.org is where you can find the most information about us.
All right, Mark Chenoweth. Sorry, we had a Michael earlier. Appreciate you being on the Silk Road Joe Show today. And listeners, got more coming up after this break, so stick with us.
According to iStock's visual GPS research, over 75% of people globally are already using some form of AI technology in their day-to-day work. Grant Farhall, Chief Product Officer at iStock, says when using AI, it's all about creating meaningful connections with your audience.
Our own research shows that over 40% of small and mid-sized businesses are using AI-generated content for marketing purposes. Generative AI tools can help businesses create those important connections that drive long-term value if done correctly.
iStock by Getty Images has released a new tool, Generative AI by iStock, which allows businesses to safely turn their creative vision into powerful content.
Generative AI by iStock empowers you to create compelling visuals to engage your audience. You can explore using AI with confidence by creating images and then downloading them with a commercial license and iStock's standard legal indemnification.
For more, visit ai.istockphoto.com/ITT.
A charming new children's book about a young girl in Jamaica who loves fixing cars with her granddad arrives today. The Blue Pickup by Natasha Triplett is a heartwarming layered story featuring beautiful illustrations by Monica Mackay. The Blue Pickup tells the story of Jew Girl, whose favorite days are spent with her granddad in his garage, fixing cars and hearing stories about his old blue pickup. Granddad used to drive the blue pickup all over the island, bringing happiness to many, but now it just sits in the driveway. One day, Jew Girl asked Granddad if he'd ever fix it, and he's unsure at first, but the pair soon finds out just what it takes to restore the memory of the blue pickup and to create new stories along the way. Author Natasha Triplett.
This book is about the joy of repairing things with our hands and preserving stories with our hearts. I hope it inspires young readers to find the right tools that allow them to take pride in hard work.
The new children's book, The Blue Pickup, is now available wherever books are sold.
Hi, I'm Catherine Judah Chilo. I have three wonderful children with my husband, Sean, who I met on the 17th season of The Bachelor. At just 5 months old, our son, Isaiah, became sick and spent 4 days in the hospital. At first, my husband and I thought he had a common cold, but it turned out to be much more serious. It was respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV. RSV is the number one reason why babies are hospitalized. I'm sharing my story so other parents can learn about the importance of helping protect their babies from RSV when they are most vulnerable to it. If you are pregnant or plan on becoming pregnant, speak to your OBGYN or healthcare provider about the risks of RSV. As a mother, I've seen a lot of warning labels, from choking hazards to baby toys, and I wish RSV came with one. To learn more, visit www.bewareofrsv.com. That's www.bewareofrsv.com. This message is brought to you by Pfizer.
What is dedication?
I am the father of a 9-year-old little girl and a 6-year-old little boy. And I find fatherhood both relentlessly challenging and relentlessly rewarding. My daughter is biological and my son is adopted. I love them both so much, from the morning when you wake up to putting them to bed at night and every moment in between. It really is so special, and boy, is it exhausting. One thing that I fear about being a parent is the future for my children. I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings. But I'm also hopeful that the future holds a more inclusive and compassionate world for them.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs, and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe, I've been with you here from CPAC today. Well, it's actually Thursday when I'm taping. It's Saturday when you're all hearing it, and I'm sure that will show up. And joining us now, actually, for our final segment of the hour is Nathan Clark, independent journalist. His work can be found at www.theblindconservative.com/substack.com. Nathan Clark, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Just been going around trying to grow the page.
Oh, cool. So as you go around and talk with people and hear what's going on here, what's the big buzz that you've been hearing about?
So my big message is the fact that being completely blind, 84% of fully blind people are registered Democrats because the DNC bribes top organizations for the blind to basically make them vote Democrat, including when I was growing up, I had a journalism teacher who told me that I couldn't vote Republican because I was blind. And I was like, I'm sorry, but I can think on my own.
Just massive stereotypes made about anyone who isn't Christian, white, heterosexual, you know? If you're not that category, you have to vote Democrat. And yet they keep, you know, at the rate they lose elections, you know, of course they're not losing as much as we'd like. But still, there's like, 40 or 50% of the country is not white, Christian, straight, male. So clearly there's a hole in their narrative somewhere.
Yeah, it is. Mine was growing up in California. I saw the destruction of high-speed rail.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, actually, folks, I met him yesterday. Well, Wednesday, not yesterday. But I got distracted. Someone walking by with I recognized. Anyway, Nathan and I were talking about this particular aspect yesterday about the high-speed rail. And I keep wanting to call it light-speed rail because that sounds awesome. But, yeah, in California, for listeners who aren't familiar with this topic, they were supposed to have this big, massive one, ran across half the state just about, and would connect the state and would be good for the environment and all that. But they have downgraded now, haven't they?
Yeah, they originally were wanting Sacramento to San Diego. Now they're doing...
That's the capital of California, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Sometimes that's what I thought, but sometimes these things surprise me. You know, sixth grade geography was long ago. But yeah, so Sacramento is like in the middle upper half of the state. San Diego's right on the Mexican border. That's a pretty big track. But Fresno, Bakersfield, they're almost next door, relatively speaking.
It's about an hour drive at most.
Yeah, and they're spending billions of dollars on this high-speed rail in California to be green just to cut an hour drive. It makes no sense.
Yeah, to make it 20 minutes. They're asking for another like $160 million for the state legislator, and the legislator wants to do it because Newsom is pushing it.
Yeah, and for listeners who aren't familiar with California geography, as I may have alluded to with myself when I didn't remember exactly Sacramento was the capital, Bakersfield and Fresno, they're not particularly populous. You know, they're nothing like even Sacramento, let alone Los Angeles or San Diego or San Francisco. So does it really make sense that they would just downgrade that rail to just those two cities, you know?
Yeah, but that's what happens when bureaucratic messes happen. So.
Yeah, when you have one party rule and there's no one challenging them, so they just feel we can do whatever we want with the money, and you have to wonder how much corruption there is involved with that.
There's no oversight. I grew up listening to John and Ken, and they were the only ones in the whole state that were bringing light to all of that.
Oh, really? Yeah, just something I guess no one wants to talk to them because and who in the voting populace out there is actually doing anything? You got the Republicans, but they seem to be just a token resistance at best.
Yeah, they're only in Riverside County and Orange County.
So you had a different experience. So you got out of the state. Where'd you go after that?
I went off to Western Illinois University because they had a really good journalism program for 2.5 years until I started a Students for Trump chapter where I got jumped, me and my vice president did, and we got attacked. I had to go to the hospital. I had to have friends of mine literally be security for the last 2 months I was there, and the end of 2020 before I transferred to University of Kansas for 2.5 years.
Yep. So for all the people who say they're tolerant and all that stuff, they jump a blind person. What the hell?
They jump a blind 11, 90-pound woman.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, see, that is really counterintuitive to the narrative that they demonstrate. You know, oh, peace, love, togetherness. If you don't believe in us, you don't believe in peace, love, togetherness. You don't believe in tolerance. You don't believe in anything like that. But then what happens when they're confronted with some of the very people they claim to be advocates for? Because I'll tell you, in dating profiles I see all the time, I'm an advocate for disabilities, advocate for this, advocate for that. The moment they get a chance to be an advocate, they literally jump the person.
Yeah. If you don't believe the same thing as them, they don't like you.
Yeah, and unfortunately, in the Black community has seen that. You know, Senator Tim Scott, for example, you know, the death threats, the racial slurs that they've called him, and then actually... I'm not allowed to say what's a euphemism for because it's still a racial slur, but the popular term now is white adjacent to describe other things that were perhaps references to ancient books about slavery. So that's as best as I can say on the air, because I'm pretty sure I'd be off the air if I said what the actual term. But yeah, they've tried to say like white adjacent. Also, a particular type of chocolate cookie that has a cream filling in the middle is another thing that they might use instead of white adjacent. And that shows the limit of their tolerance right there. Oh, you're not allowed to be racist. You got to be anti-racist. By the way, here's a bunch of racial slurs if you are of this race that we claim to advocate for.
Yeah. I grew up in California, where a lot of Hispanics in Southern California are starting to shift, except for in LA County. And all of a sudden, violence against has risen. They literally are okay with Antifa going to random people's houses and starting fights and stuff.
And it's being California, nothing really comes of it, because already, even if it isn't political violence and their little brown shirts and Antifa going around, you know, still the police wouldn't respond if it was just a general assault, because they're undermanned, underpowered, and they know that even if they wasted the resources to take an hour to actually respond to the crime, if it's something so small as someone showing up and busting your face, the district attorneys are just going to throw it out. They don't care.
No, you can steal up to $950 in California. That's why I'm glad that after I went to Kansas, I moved down to San Antonio, Texas, because it's not like that down there.
No, not at all. That's also part of the problem, though. You have all these people fleeing California, but some of them bring those ideologies with them. So you get bastions of liberalism like Austin or Houston. Do you feel San Antonio may be in danger of that happening there?
If you had asked me 5 years ago, I would have said yes, but currently we're trying to flip the county commissioner seats because we have one Republican who votes with Democrats more than the progressive does. We're primarying him out right now. His name's Grant Moody. We're having Chris Shuhart run. And then in 2026, we're hoping if we can flip seats 1 and 3 this time, then we can put a good Republican in seat 5, and we have a 3-2 majority then in the county commissioner seats.
All right, Nathan Clark, we have 20 seconds. I have to give us your website this time and where we can find out more about you. Also, your social media handles.
It's theblindconservative.substack.com. And then on social media, on X, Instagram, and Facebook, all The Blind Conservative.
All right. Nathan Clark, appreciate being on the Silker Joe Show. Listeners, thank you for tuning in from this CPAC hour. And maybe we'll have another one next weekend, far, far removed from when the event actually happened. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.